Hi, this is Rodney Crowell, and you're listening to Life Minute TV. Rainy
days in California. Grammy-winning singer-songwriter Rodney Crowell has a career that spans more than 50 years, with 15 number one country hits. He's written for legends Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson to Tim McGraw and Keith Urban. He stopped by the Life Minute studios recently to tell us about his latest release, Airline Highway, and so much more. This is a Life Minute with Rodney Crowell.
I'm told that Airline Highway is my 20th album. I lost count a long time ago, so that could be true. But Emmylou Harris and I made a couple of duet albums, and I produced quite a few records. So whether it's my 20th, I don't know. We decided to go to Louisiana to record, mainly because I just have a kind of a romantic attachment to the swampy lands down there and to the culture. And having grown up on the east side of Houston, I was fascinated by the music that came out of western Louisiana. I think we wound up in a recording studio on the Vermilion River, just chasing an old feeling, I suppose. But as it turned out, it was a superb studio and we had a great band and we recorded an album. And now I'm sitting here in New York City. Who knew? Rainy days in California. I wrote the songs all at home in my home studio. Tyler Bratt's the producer. We sort of started to realize that even though I wanted to go to Louisiana, there wasn't a narrative until we actually realized that a lot of the songs kind of fit that narrative. So it was as if the record made us more than we made the record. We met up with some musicians, friends that we love from Austin, Rachel Loya and Conrad Jacroon and David Grissom. And then Tyler and I and Catherine Marks went down from Nashville and we all met in the studio. And I had the songs, and Tyler and Trina Shoemaker, the engineer, and I, we'd sort of settle on the songs. And then it just becomes a matter of getting together and picking out a good key and figuring out how to want to record it and hit and record on the tape machine and make an album. The theme, one, it starts out with the narrator wants to get out of California. Well, I used to live in California, in Los Angeles, and it's like, we want to get out of Los Angeles and go to another L.A., Louisiana. That was the starting place from it. And it's a song Lucas Nelson and I wrote, actually in Nashville, so the topography of the destination from one town to the next was just a story that we were telling. Then I had a song called Louisiana Sunshine Feeling Okay, and that, that fits what we're doing. Louisiana Sunshine Feeling Okay. I fell into Larkin Poe quite by accident. I don't even know how. It's just one day I was out for a walk, and Larkin Poe, who is this? And I listened to it, and I went, this is really fresh. It's kind of bluesy. It was like well-educated girls from North Georgia. Oh, wow, this is a juxtaposition, that they get so down and dirty with it, and they're educated girls. And then I always say that I'm an overachiever in the marriage department. My wife, Claudia, is a crowning achievement in my life, and I've written a lot because of her, a lot to her. Sometime things you don't believe in making love to a sometime thing. Sometime Thing is a particular, it's a funny story going back to when we first got together and there was an actor who will remain nameless who was trying to move in on my territory and I just stood back and watched it happen and she ignored him. I figured, well, she's the one for me. And then I followed it up with another song about my wife, Claudia, which is, She's Some Kind of Woman. She's some kind of woman. But then there comes a breakup song that Ashley McBride and I wrote together that was fiction. And we write fiction as well. Taking flight, forget about tomorrow. Ashley's a piece of work, as they say. She's got a lot of energy and she's got a great sense of humor. She makes me laugh. She makes me laugh all the way down into my belly. Like that about her. She's nobody's fool. She's a great singer. She's an artist and smart and funny, and I like her a lot. Simple. You try to keep it simple. simple. Isn't all that simple. It's a song that I wrote in Dallas at my mother-in-law and father-in-law's house, just sitting on the floor of the bedroom where we were staying. Wrote that song. It's about living long enough to actually appreciate who you are. And it winds up with a story of a woman I knew at one time. We were almost romantic with each other. We certainly were attracted to each other, but later on I learned that she'd taken her own life, and it ends the album, and that's the one song that kind of goes into the darker realms of things. But everything leading up to it is fairly upbeat. My father was a singer, an unknown singer. I mean, he had what you would call a local band. Better singer than me. He didn't write any songs, and I do, so that got me out of Houston. I left home when I was 15 to join a band, a rock and roll band, and we actually worked, and I made what little money that I had at the time playing in a teenage rock and roll band. Then one thing led to another, wound up in Nashville in kind of a songwriting salon where I was surrounded by some really great songwriters, and luckily that was what my destination was. You know, I'm a songwriter first and foremost. Just the right place at the right time. Learned from some really great songwriters and met up with Emmylou Harris and moved to Los Angeles to be in a band with her band, her touring band. She recorded a bunch of my songs, and because she did, a lot of other people did as well. And I've had this really sweet career as a songwriter and as a recording artist and as a producer. The truth is I had a knack for being in the right place at the right time, I suppose. Who knows? I might have missed out on a lot of things by being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But look, I'm happy. I'm still making records. And I'm sitting here talking to you. Did I know I have a knack for songwriting? Well, I wrote my graduating class song. I don't know if graduating classes still have songs, but I wrote one for the seniors 68 where I come from, but it was not a good song at all by any stretch. It was less than amateurish, childish even. I would never play it again, and I'm only telling you this story because you got to start somewhere. Really smart, creative, interesting lyric. An unforgettable melody and a halfway decent voice to deliver it, along with some really creative, talented musicians who can bring it to life. That can make for a good song, but even that doesn't guarantee it's going to be a good one. I could do 20 minutes on people whose work I admire. Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, Leonard Cohen, pretty much at the top. I got to know Willie in my early 20s. Willie's such a sweet soul. It was for all of the influence and power that he had as a performer and a songwriter, and for in my admiration to be around him. He was a really comfortable guy to be around, so it kind of melted away the illusion of this really great artist is not just another fine human being. That was a valuable lesson to learn from Willie. And I think it influenced me that way because, I mean, I'm a pretty successful songwriter in this world, but I think if anybody didn't know me or admired me and spent some time with me, I hope they would come away with the same feeling I came away with Willie, which is, hey, this guy's present and he sees me. Willie just recently this year released an album of 12 of my songs.
And this is a Rodney Crowell, Chris Stapleton song that we like on that album. I love you till the day I die. I love you till the day I die.
I love you till the day I die. I had an idea for it, and Chris came over on the day, and I said, hey, I've got this thing that I've never pushed all the way to the finish line, and he said, what is it? And I showed it to him, and he immediately added a line that worked right away, and then we were off and finished it. I mean, in less than 2 hours, we had a song. I wouldn't change anything about that song. Honestly, I wouldn't. And I'm never afraid to admit when one of my songs needs some more work. That song, I Love You Till the Day I Die, is like, it's, we got it all right. Yeah, Chris, we only spent one day together writing. I admire Chris greatly. As a matter of fact, he was, I think it was the Super Bowl or something, he did the opening Star Spangled Banner on a guitar, and I sent him a text saying, okay, man, you have reached the pinnacle. It's like, I don't know, it's as good as it gets for anybody to do the Star Spangled Banner. So, yeah, that boy's got a lot of talent. And the truth of the matter is, I've never written a song for anybody. Honestly, and I don't mean that in any condescending or defensive way. I learned very early in my career as a songwriter that it's my job to write the song for it. And that if I'm patient and if I'm doing my job, the song will tell me what it wants to be. And I found out early that if I get a song right, then somebody like Johnny Cash or Keith Urban is more likely to record the song than if I sat down and tried to write a song for them. The two times that I've done that in the long time that I've been doing it failed miserably. So I learned, I just write the song for it, and then if it's any good, it gets out there and does the job it needs to do. When anybody records one of my songs, it's like I gotta stop for a moment and say, they didn't have to do that, and I'm really grateful that they did. I was delighted when the Viagra Boys did a rave-up version of one of my songs. The Oak Ridge Boys, all the way to Grateful Dead. All right, it's Grateful Dead did one of my songs, and I was like, wow, it's Grateful Dead. You can't make that stuff up. Any way a song can get here is, it could be a particular voicing on a guitar. It could be something that I overheard. Most times it'll be something that I come up with on a guitar. I wish I wrote on piano, and I don't wish enough to stop and take lessons and learn how to play a piano. Once upon a time, I own a piano, but I don't play it. I should. But generally speaking, it'll just come from a sound that I strike on the guitar, a feeling or something. I get a word, I get two lines, and then one thing leads to another. I've just learned to be patient. Be patient, the song will tell me what it wants to be, if it's gonna be a song at all. Each new day inspires me creatively because it's another day that I get to get up and go to work as a songwriter. Anybody in my family would tell you if I'm not out, I'm a performer as well, so if I'm not out on the road performing, if I'm home, I get up and have a cup of coffee and get to work. I have a great job. I get to make stuff up and I get to write songs, so I can't wait to go back to work doing that, and so far it's still fulfilling. I'm just lucky that I was blessed with ability to write songs that could cross into other genres. But probably the more truthful answer, if I'm willing to stand behind it, is that, hey, I write really good songs.
First time I heard Johnny Cash sing, I Walk the Line.
Johnny Cash was my father-in-law for a good number of years and my friend for 21 years. He had a great influence on me. I should have mentioned him early because one of his songs was really knocked me out a long time ago. I was married to his daughter, Roseanne, of course. We made a lot of music together. Being Johnny Cash, for him being my father-in-law, it was a gift. You know, the larger-than-life man in black, that's a professional persona. The father-in-law, and, you know, the human being, very much the same as Willie, and very much probably what you find out about really great artists is that oftentimes they're really fine human beings. Warm, humorous, friendly. Johnny Cash was all of those things, and he was also larger than life. He could turn that on and off, and I always admired that he could go from being the man in black to being this kind of doofus guy who was making funny jokes. Professionally, one of the things that I learned from Johnny Cash, Roseanne and I went up to Circle Star Theater in San Francisco, and it was at a low ebb in his career, and he was playing Circle Star Theater there, and it was very poorly attended. He went and did a show, and he gave it the best he could. I think he was a little embarrassed that we showed up at such a sparsely attended show of his, but when it was over, he got in a limousine and sped out of there as if there was 40,000 people in the audience. And I remember thinking, that's it, man. that's it. You're who you always were, and you're who you'll always be. And then it wasn't 4 or 5 years later till it all came back to him, and he was right back in the same place. And I admired that, because this one show, or it was a low ebb in his career, but he was still the same guy that was at the top of his game. Career highlights: playing the Albert Hall, opening for Johnny Cash, as it turned out to be, but it was Albert Hall on my own, and I also played there with Emmy Lou, but that was a career highlight. A lot of really great things to be grateful. I think, but the highlight really comes meeting Claudia, my wife, and my family comes ahead of all of this. I mean, that's love, you know. It's careers ebb and flow, you know. Family is another thing. They'll be there till the end. I have 4 daughters. They're all musical, but they won't do it. They sing songs and make up stuff and tease me about what I'm doing, but none of them have followed suit. I like making up silly songs with them, for them, with them, and for our grandchildren. Loving all night, hanging on tight, no doubt about it, been loving all night, yeah. I produced an album on my wife, Claudia. We met on a video shoot. She was the lead female character in a video. We actually fell in love on a video about a song called Loving All Night. Who knew? It just was the perfect thing, and we've been together for 33 years since then, and she's perfect. But she's far more sensible than me, and decided that she didn't really need to be traveling around singing all the time like I do. In my case, I think the key for my longevity, because I've been doing it 50 years, is that at one particular point in my career, I had a real spike in success. And for me, knowing myself as well as I did, I found myself thinking, if I try to chase this and do this every time out, I'm going to fall short. But if I just do what I did to get there in the first place, which is just write songs, and it just happened to happen that it was my time. My 15 minutes of fame was there. I didn't want to try to prop it up or to get in my head about, oh, well, I got to do all this because I got to stay on top. That's not me. And so I just went contentedly about doing my work. My work became less commercial, but thankfully, there was enough of an audience out there that were interested in what I had to say and what I was doing that I can continue working. The shorter answer is just be true to yourself. I would probably tell my younger self, say age 24, it's going to be all right. Just keep breathing. Trust yourself. It's going to be all right. The best advice I've ever been given, a long time ago, someone who I really admired said, shut up, you might learn something. Still applies. Really good writing is a lot of times about revision. Oftentimes it happens on the first draft, but anymore very rare. So I have these songwriting camps where songwriters come supposedly to get some wisdom from me. And I just say, no soft rhymes. You know, make sure things really rhyme, because the language sounds better when it rhymes. And don't fall in love with what you've written, because you may not be there yet. I'd say most of the time when I've arrived at where the song really needs to be, I recognize it, but not always. And there are songs that I started writing in the 70s that I'm still tinkering with. I mean, songs that have gone out there and had a run of success out in the world are still like, oh, that last verse. There's something in there that I still haven't found. Just because it's been recorded and out there doesn't mean it's over. The song that I'm working on right now that's unfinished is the most important song I've ever been involved with. That doesn't mean when I do finish it up that it's going to have a place in the world. It may just fade into oblivion, but the work is the most important thing. So the fact that I'm back at work on yet another song is far more important to me than anything else, because I plan to do this until somebody gives me the hook and yanks me out, and I mean literally yanks me out into the next dimension. Oh, I'd like to work with Tom Waits. In saying that, it's like he writes with his wife and makes really great records. He doesn't need me. I just admire what he does so much. It's like I could learn something from him, I know. And I can learn something from him just by listening to his records. After that, you know, Keith Richard, like, yeah, I want to play something with Keith. I'd like to write a rock and roll song with Keith Richard.
It's interesting to me that gardening is very much like the music business. At some point, you're going to get your humility handed to you.
When I'm not working, oh, I got a vegetable garden, beautiful vegetable garden. I love that. I love watching things grow. Dinner time with my wife at home. 9 times out of 10, she's the one conjuring it, but now and again, it's me. But the conversation about what are we going to have for dinner, and then what is the time that we're going to spend together around that food is one of the great things in life. And my friends, my children, getting some exercise. You know, just getting some exercise, going for a long walk. I live in an area where it's very hilly, so I can walk back in the woods and in the hills. Nice. Music provides color, and it provides emotion, entertainment, and it's transcending. Really good music will transcend the inertia of the day. The first time I discovered Ravel, I didn't really know much about romantic French composers, and I fell in love with what I heard. And when I finally discovered Miles Davis, it was transcending. It's like Kind of Blue, the album that Miles Davis, and I think in 1956 is when it was. Beautiful, beautiful work, and it touched my heart. Leonard Cohen, the last 3 albums that he made in his life were like, oh, I just couldn't wait. I would imagine it's like, for me, it was like when Charles Dickens wrote his novels in installments. And I could imagine that people would be waiting for the next chapter or next installment of A Tale of Two Cities or whatever it was. That's the way it was with Leonard Cohen at the end of his life. I couldn't wait for the next thing because he was a man at the end of his life writing beautifully about being a man at the end of his life. And I certainly want to be, when I'm reaching the end of my life, I want to be writing beautifully about it. I don't want to do it the way Leonard Cohen did, but I want to do my version of it. So having experienced him doing it, it doesn't instruct me how to do it, but it gives me the idea that it's possible. I think I'll play a song called Rainy Days in California that Lucas Nelson and I wrote one fine day.
They fly by me like dragons. Oil fires and car tire smoke. Helicopter searchlights through my window. These midnight main streets ain't no joke. I'm listening to the siren wail, counting sheep to no avail. Traffic jam from here to devil's claw marks point the way. There's not much shaking out on a fault line unless the big one comes today. If I go north straight up the one, destination Oregon. Days in California. fly by me like dragons. Oil well fires and car tire smoke.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.